Cam,
how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing great as well.
Did you see we got a couple comments on iTunes?
And you know what?
What?
I think there might be one or two that I don't even know.
I know. Amazing, isn't it?
Woo-hoo.
It's weird.
So I hear you have a good case for us today.
I do. I have an interesting case. Let's put it that
interesting.
Way. I wouldn't even call it a case. I would just call it a
story.
Story. Mm. I would call it a biography. Nice. I would call it interesting to me anyway.
Okay. I'm sure.
All right.
Hit me with it, girl.
Well, I was on Facebook the other day and somebody posted a article saying, would you do this? And basically the article was about taking a tattoo from a dead loved one.
Ew.
And using it as art.
Ew.
Mm-hmm. There's two camps. Some either extremely grossed out. Others thought it was the coolest thing ever. As soon as I saw using tattoos as decoration, this person immediately popped in my head. And this person's name is Iza Koch, or the Red Witch of Buchenwald.
Ooh, okay.
She's actually noted to be one of the most evil villains during the whole Holocaust.
Really?
Yeah, worse than Himmler, worse than Mengele. She always wasn't like that.
Let's hear.
So let's just say I'm not really good on German pronunciations. I barely have
command of the English language.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I have mommy brain. Iza was born in September of 1906. She was born in Dresden, Germany, to a factory supervisor. And by all accounts, she was a very happy child, no cares in the world, and it was pretty uneventful. Nothing big happened. By the age of 15 in 1921, Iza dropped out of her schooling and went to a trade school to become a bookkeeper. Like, she did clerical work mostly. Oh,
okay. So like a secretary?
Like a secretary, okay. Yes. Okay. And that was one of the few jobs that were available to women at the time. So later in 1932, Iza became one of the very first women to join the rising Nazi party. And that's only a year before Hitler was appointed chancellor. Many Germans were drawn to the Nazi party. It was coming right off World War I. And Germany used to be this once great country. And actually, it was one of the largest economies of all of Europe until the world. Right. It was very prosperous. They go into this war. They lose the war, basically. Right. You know, and then here comes Hitler, this great speaker. He wanted to end the Treaty of Versailles. Do you know about the Treaty of Versailles?
I'm language arts person.
All right. Basically, this treaty brought World War I to an end. The treaty stated that Germany had to lose some land, they had to demilitarize, they had to pay reparations to other countries like Britain, France.
And so it was lining up Germany to not be in a good financial state.
No. In 1921, the cost that Germany had to pay out in equivalency of today, mm-hmm, was $442 billion.
No way.
And that's U.S. money. U.K., it was 284 billion euros.
Oh.
I know. So Germany was totally in financial straits.
Okay.
I mean, they couldn't pay the huge reparations, much less pay to get their own country back to where it once was.
Mm-hmm.
Germans, the Nazis, Hitler, that party spoke to many Germans who were struggling with making ends meet, and they were struggling with the loss of their identity being this great world power.
Mm-hmm.
Many of these people joined, and Elsa was one of them. So once she joined the party, Elsa did not socialize with anybody that wasn't a Nazi.
Oh, she seems like a nice person.
Well, she wanted like goes with like, right?
Yeah, I guess.
So, and it said she only dated SS officers, and the ones that were highly decorated always are the ones that caught her eye.
Of course.
So she was also known for being very attractive, and she had beautiful red hair and bright green eyes.
Ugh, I wouldn't trust her then.
You never trust a redhead.
Nope, never.
Nope.
Okay, you check that out.
So let me tell you about the man she's soon to meet. His name was Karl Otto Koch. Karl was a decorated veteran of World War I. He had been wounded and captured by the British, and he was held as a prisoner of war. After the war, he couldn't hold down any civilian jobs. He had a tough time acclimating to civilian life.
Mm-hmm.
In 1931, he finally took a job as an SS officer or Nazi paramilitary corps. Oh. That same year, he happened to get divorced to his wife. And it's unsure if he got divorced because of the Nazi party or if there's anything.
Or maybe her, the other woman. Or
No. He didn't meet her for much longer. Okay. But he did have a son with this other woman. Okay. Carl started off working a desk. And then he started to show signs of being a great leader. So they put him as an administrator of a Nazi concentration camp. Now, concentration camps seem to be a catch-all mm-hmm. phrase for all the camps that happened during World War II mm-hmm. or before World War II. There wasn't concentration camps, usually were for political prisoners mm-hmm. and the such. And then the death camps were camps that you were sent to just to die. And I think there was only like 6 or 7 of those death camps. The rest were not supposed to be immediately put to death. They were just supposed to be prisoners.
Okay.
He was stationed at Sachsenhausen, which is a concentration camp. There he was introduced to Isa. And some say he was actually introduced by Himmler, Heinrich Himmler. So in 1936, they were married. And this is interesting, it interested me. The SS, if you were an SS officer, you didn't get married under Christian wedding. You had a pseudo-pagan ceremony.
I think that's strange.
It's very strange. Basically, these weddings were held out in the open under a tree, or it was held in an SS building, and it was decorated with life runes and sunflowers and fir twigs. And there's even this eternal flame that burned in an urn in front of the couple while they exchanged rings, and where they also received the official SF's gift.
Ooh, what could that be?
It was bread and salt. And that symbol, it symbolizes the earth's purity and fruitfulness.
Oh,
yeah, and then they were given a copy of Mein Kampf.
Oh, nothing says congratulations on your new life like Mein Kampf.
Exactly. There's a great big ceremony where it's taken out of this huge wooden casket. So the Mein Kampf was handed to the groom. And then once that happened, the happy couple would walk out through a great big aisle of somber people doing the Nazi salute.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Yeah, it was fun.
Mm, love.
It's great.
Nazi love.
Carl treated no one like a human being. He was known for being extremely cruel and sadistic, and he enjoyed impressing his superiors with his cruelty. And like just a whim, in a word, if he didn't like you, bam, he could have somebody beaten or killed.
Really?
Yeah.
Was he mean to his wife, or do you...
Said that he was cruel
okay.
to his wife.
Okay.
But they did totally go about corporal punishment.
With their children?
With their children.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay.
One prisoner actually said that the barbarity of his torture practices exceeded all powers of the imagination.
Really?
Right. To get one forced confession from a Jewish prisoner, the prisoner was savagely beaten, and then Koch ordered the man to have his anus plugged with hot asphalt and then force-fed him castor oil.
And they think that's going to make you talk?
Well, it's going to make you do something. Once Carl proved his worth at Sachsenhausen,
Gesundheit. That's German, too.
It is. Now, this was brand new camp, and it was supposed to be one of the largest and most important camps. And that fed into Koch's sense of self-importance, right?
Of course it did.
Right. Now, in this camp, it was mostly political prisoners, religious clergy, people who spoke out against the Nazis, criminals, homosexuals.
Anybody that they didn't like.
Anyone that they deemed inferior, didn't like, spoke against them, all that kind of stuff. But it was also widely known that Buchenwald housed all the finest skilled artists.
Really?
Yeah. So the SS would call upon these artisans to benefit themselves. Like Carl once had this beautiful marble desk set made for Himmler, and the worth of that was supposedly $30,000 as a gift for Christmas.
Wow.
Yeah. They carved furniture, they made jewelry, produced paintings, murals. They sold it to the SS officers' homes. They did photography studios, laboratories, a printing shop with books, had jewelry made, had everything, and they would sell it and profit from it.
So if you were one of these people that had an artistic skill, I guess it behooved them to illustrate that and
right.
show them, because that would help you live, I would guess. Were they treated any better?
They weren't treated any better, but no expense was spared to provide them the finest of the tools or the materials. And for a few hours each day, the prisoners that had the talent can concentrate on their creations and kind of forget about what was going on with their lives.
Yeah, they had a mental escape.
Exactly. And they could work on things. And I mean, they had everything. They carved furniture. They made jewelry. They paintings, murals. Earl and Izza moved into a lovely estate on the grounds of the camp, which they called Villa Koch.
Villa Koch.
And this camp had everything. They had a zoo. They had like a little... They had a zoo. And it's also known that it's said, I should say, that Carl would have a prisoner thrown into the bear enclosure every day.
Why?
So the bear could eat.
Was
and
this for
then,
enjoyment to watch?
I don't know if it's punishment or torture. Well, it obviously is both.
It's
but
both. Yeah.
I don't know if it was for his enjoyment or to scare the prisoners. I don't know what it was used, but they had a bear and an eagle in the same cage. They would feed the prisoner to the bear, and the eagle would pick the bones.
I can't believe people exist.
It's unfathomable. But they had a casino. They had a zoo. They had movie theaters. So it was on top of this hill below this little town, and they had their own little town where they had everything they needed.
Now, did the people in the town know that that horrendous place existed?
They knew they were up there, but they... Well, we'll talk about that later.
Okay.
All right. Between the years of 1938 and 1940s, they had three children. The firstborn was a boy named Artvin. Second one, girl named Giselle. The one was a daughter named Gundren. I think that's how you pronounce her name.
We'll just call her Baby G.
Baby G. She was supposedly named after Himmler's daughter. You know, most women, once they become mothers, they kind of experience that empathy, that deep love.
Maternal love.
Maternal love, or just... You get more
softer.
Yeah. Not her. She kind of went the other way.
Of course she did.
And I mean, who knows? Maybe it's the surrounding brutality.
You would have to become desensitized.
You would
to
have
it.
To.
I mean,
you would have
go,
to.
You've seen I mean, these people starving to death as you're having a picnic.
I mean, the camp was less than 1,000 yards from the house.
You would see it.
Or maybe she felt entitled because her husband was in charge and he had so much power that he could do whatever he wanted. So anyway, she went from being this person to this red-haired devil, and she involved herself in the day-to-day operations of the camp. And actually, the inmates became more afraid of her than most of the guards.
The inmates became more afraid of her than the inmates were afraid of
right.
the guard.
That's where she gets the red-haired or the Red Witch of Buchenwald, the Bitch of Buchenwald. That's where she gets all her names.
Wow.
Yeah,
okay.
It was bad. Izza was one of seven SS officers' wives at the camp. But she didn't make friends very easily.
I wonder why.
I know. She seems such a good person.
Such a nice person.
All accounts say that she was vain, cruel, cold-blooded, degenerate, power-hungry. She was just worse than her husband. And some even said she was a bit of a nymphomaniac. She was known to have quite a few affairs. But on Carl.
I'd be afraid to cheat on Carl.
Carl supposedly did, too. It was kind of like a free-for-all.
Huh.
She loved to dress provocatively and walk around the prisoners. And I mean, it was an all-men camp, and so they were forced to be celibate, right? So she would put on these tempting dress, and if anybody, she would try to make it so the men would look at her. She would dress provocatively, and they were kind of forced to be celibate, right? I mean, the entire camp was men, and she would make sure that they, like, would look at her, but when they looked at her, she would make sure they were beaten. She would write down their number. She would go to her husband or to other guards, and she would give the man the number, and the next thing you knew, the man would be beaten. One prisoner said that he was working, and Izza rode up on horseback, and when he looked up at her, she goes, "What, are you looking at my legs?" And then she took a riding crop and beat his face.
And you wonder why she doesn't have friends.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it seems she beat a lot of people with that riding crop. Actually, she beat someone so badly that he lost sight in one eye. Mm-hmm. But she would really like to see these prisoners beat.
See, there's something very wrong with
her. To cross her at any time was bad luck. I mean, she would be upset if you greeted her. Next day, she would be upset that you didn't greet her. Then she would be...
So look at me, don't look at me. Look at
yeah.
me, don't look at me. Look
right.
at me, don't look at me.
I mean, basically, it was just on a whim. You couldn't win with her. They would do or not do. She would write down that number and then take it to an SS officer or her husband, and then they would be beaten. And they wouldn't be beaten like just then. All the prisoners were gathered in the yard, like thousands of prisoners, and the person to be beaten would be stripped down naked, just beaten. And the prisoners said that having to watch that was torture for themselves, to having to hear the cries of pain that was coming from the person being beaten, or to see like the wounds just drip blood from just horror. I couldn't imagine it. Prisoners said they had a hard time watching it, but yeah. Iza didn't.
No, of course she didn't.
They said that she always seemed to stay right at the fence line and watch every last minute of it.
See, somebody that likes that, like gets off on that, that is one sick individual.
It's just weird.
It's so weird.
You don't expect a woman to do that.
You know, I don't expect.
I mean, everybody has a sort of morbid curiosity about stuff like that, but to actually, I don't want to be. Yeah,
I hate it. I hate seeing people fight. Ooh.
Ugh. So, and not only that, it's sometimes if she and the kids were bored, she would take them down to the fence, and if her husband was around, he would have the prisoners chased around for their enjoyment, like make it so they would have to crawl through the mud or do extra jumping jacks or stand. I mean, she brought the kids into it.
I wonder what happened to, like...
I have no idea. Like, at roll call, if they came down during roll call, her husband would make sure that the men were exercised to the point of collapse and make them do extra goofy things to get his kids to laugh.
See, all those punishments should come back on them.
It's awful. In 1940, the Kochs were living a very lavish lifestyle. I mean, much greater than any SS officer or commandant would be making.
Mm-hmm.
They were going on lots of ski trips. One of the ski trips that they went on, when they went on these ski trips, they always left the kids with...
Yeah, because the kids wouldn't come with them, of course.
Right. They always left the kids with Carl's sister, right? One of the ski trips, they received a phone call from Carl's sister saying, you have to come home. Gudrun is very, very sick. And they didn't.
They didn't.
They ignored everything, and the baby died without her parents around.
What?
4 months old. Some people said that she had malnutrition. But I only found one source for that.
I guess they couldn't get off the slopes to come see baby G.
That's just, that shows how heartless they exactly. didn't care about their child.
They probably didn't even care.
Right. Exactly. It didn't seem to affect them anyway at all.
People are so cruel.
But yeah, besides the ski trips, Iza was always dressed in the finest clothes. She had tons of furs, hats, shoes. The house was decorated to the nines, everything. She did not want for anything. She actually loved to ride horses, so she made her husband build her this huge riding arena.
Next to the concentration camp.
Next to the concentration camp. It actually was built by the slave labor from the inmates. The riding arena was about the size of a football field, and it took the lives of about 30 inmates to build it. She had it rushed so quickly that 30 inmates died of exhaustion.
She's evil.
Yeah, and... Once it was completed, she rode every morning. She rode around the little arena.
Mm-hmm.
And she also made a brass band that was made up of the talented artists in the camp, the prisoners.
The prisoners became her brass band that she could ride her horse to?
Yes. So she pranced around on her horse, or I guess her horse pranced around.
With her?
With her on it, and they played.
Talk about a twisted
sense. There's even mirrors, like big full-length mirrors all around.
So she can watch herself.
Yeah. Let's see, what else did they do? Oh, they had lots of lavish parties with tons of food. Because remember, during World War II, food was very scarce. Like, even here in the United States, there was rations and all that kind of stuff. It said that she had, the wine cellar had stocked to the gills of all the finest wines and champagnes, at least 60 hams. I mean, their parties were totally insane.
They're having a food party next to these poor people.
A thousand feet away. Yeah. Uh-huh. Don't forget, they also had the slave labor inside. They had political prisoners inside. So these lavish parties, you know, expensive wine, they lasted all to the night and usually ended up in orgies.
What?
Yeah. Sin of the flesh going for them. So, you know, how do you get all this money, they ask?
How do you get all this money, Jen? Does an SS officer make that much?
I don't really know. I couldn't find anything. And if I could come up with something, it was all in German marks, which no longer exists. And I'm sure there'd be some kind of heavy mathematical equation that I wouldn't be able to figure out anyway.
No, just say no.
But it doesn't matter because Carl was embezzling.
That couple, they just keeps getting better and better.
Yeah, they were embezzling from the Nazis.
Well.
Yeah, because if you're going to do that. There's a commissary at this camp, and he would overcharge the prisoners on prisoner intake when they had to give all their possessions to the guards. Mm-hmm. They would steal that.
Of course they would.
He skimmed off the top from the casinos, from the movie theaters. And, you know, it's been said about how the Nazis always took the gold teeth from the dead mm-hmm. and have it melted down. Mm-hmm. He took most of that.
And had what, jewelry made?
Well, he did have a gold fob made, a watch fob
Ugh.
Made from that. But it's said that out of 20,000 grams, that he only turned in 8,000 grams of gold to the Nazis.
I wonder if most of those officers skimmed
off
the
top. Sure they did. I'm sure they did.
I think they would almost have to.
Right. Well, the camp had a bunch of doctors there and, you know, like Joseph Mengele, he wasn't actually here at this camp, but they had a doctor named Wagner who kind of took an interest to the prisoners that had tattoos.
Oh, no.
And he wanted to do a research project, kind of like a dissertation.
I'm going to guess it's probably not going to be a nice coffee table
book,
is it? Well,
he decided he wanted to research for his dissertation to see if tattooed humans show any criminal inclinations because of their tattooing. Like, are you a criminal because you got the tattoo or what? I don't know. He did get his doctorate. I mean, this was a serious doctorate. He got honors for this the whole
nine yards. You didn't get it at University of Phoenix?
I don't think it was Phoenix. It could have been. I don't know. I don't think. Yeah, it could have been.
Okay.
So anyway, he wanted to do this research project. So Carl said, yeah, okay, go ahead and do it. The project included getting the prisoners, photographing their tattoos, then taking the prisoners to the infirmary where they would dose them with some kind of poisonous substance, killing them. Then they would fillet the tattoo off their bodies and then take that skin and tan it so it could be preserved.
Nice.
Yeah, it was very nice. One of the biggest specimens they have went from right above the nipple down to the belly button. And it's of a knight slaying a dragon.
Okay, so would mm-hmm. they frame this and like put it up as artwork?
No, or? He just studied it. Soon our good friend Izza got a hold of it. And she got really interested in this project. And she decided she was going to help out.
Of course she is.
And she actually had the idea of using the tattooed skin of the prisoners for industrial use, which was one of her hobbies.
Explain. I don't understand.
She thought the skin should be used in as book covers, lampshades.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
People have said that Izza would go into the camps and have prisoners take their shirts off, and she would look for tattoos that suit her fancy. And usually it was the raunchier ones, like the splayed naked lady with wings on her back. Mm-hmm. That was one of her top ones.
Mm-hmm.
So if she saw a tattoo she liked, once again, she'd get out a little notepad, write down a number, and she'd leave. Well, the next thing you know, the SS officer would come for the prisoner, take them away, and that prisoner would never be seen again.
Nice.
And actually, many prisoners that worked in the lab where the doctor worked.
Practicing? Where the doctor practiced?
Yeah. The lab where the doctor practiced, there was also prisoners that would work for him.
Well,
and they would say that they would see a certain tattoo on a prisoner, and then that prisoner would disappear. And then later they would see the tattoo on tan skin right in front of them.
I don't even know what to say.
Mm-hmm. She wasn't the only one that liked that. Other SS officers liked it too. Like people would come in and say, hey, I really like this. Can this be made in a knife sheath? Or I have this really neat manicure set. Could a box be made for this? And because remember,
of
they
human
had
skin.
And they would have the other prisoners, remember the artisans that were all in the camp, they would have that made. They would send skin to the prisoners who would make whatever they needed from the skin. They would use the human skin as leather on whatever project other SS officers wanted.
That's
it's gross.
Disgusting.
It's really gross. It's amazing. And lampshades for your house. And not only that, they said that Izza had gloves and a purse made out of the skin too.
So if somebody came up to her and they said, I love your purse, who is that? And she'd say, it's made by John. And then they'd say, really? And she's like, no, seriously, it's made by John.
Yeah, no, it's pretty bad. Though rumor also had it that she had mummified thumbs as light switches, you know, the on and off light switches in the wall. but that was never found. That's just a rumor, probably propaganda. But not only did she like to decorate with human flesh, tattooed skin, she also took the bisected human organs that were in like glass blocks, and she would hang them all around her house. The doctor was also, or one of the doctors there was also into doing the shrunken heads. So she had
prisoners,
yes.
Oh my God.
She would also hang those up, and some said that they were in their dining room, you know, and her kids lived there too. And it's some prisoners even said that they saw her kids playing with the shrunken heads.
I don't even know what to say.
I know. It's disturbing, isn't it?
I just can't believe that people live like this and then they think that that's normal, that that's okay.
I think there's just, you start living around it so much that it,
I guess it just becomes normal.
I don't know. You lose your humanity. That's basically all it is your humanity.
It really is.
So this is all going to come to a crashing halt because one day this high-ranking SS officer, his name is Josiah, and he is the Prince of Waldeck, I guess. Like, he was a real-life prince. I think he was heir to the German throne, which wasn't around anymore due to World War I, but he was still a prince. He was looking at the death list of all the people that had died in Buchenwald. Mm-hmm. And he noticed this doctor that worked at Buchenwald, mm-hmm. right? And he knew the name because this doctor once treated him. And he liked the doctor.
So they were kind of friends.
They were friends, right. So he investigated the case and found that Koch had actually ordered this doctor and another doctor killed.
Why?
Well, he said they were political prisoners, but they weren't. It was actually because they had treated Karl for syphilis. And he thought, well, they're going to tell, so I need to get rid of them.
Did she have syphilis too? Because, you know, you do.
It's if she did,
from that.
If she did, no one.
A lot.
If she did, it's never been said. Right. So he didn't want them to talk, so he had him killed. Waldeck then ordered a full-scale investigation of the camp and found more of Karl's orders to kill prisoners at the camp and also revealed about the embezzlement.
Good.
Mm-hmm. Karl was then charged with incitement to murder. And then a little while later, embezzlement.
Incitement to murder.
Incitement, exactly.
Izza
was charged along with other camp officials, but she was more of a conspiracy for embezzlement. And
she had to know what was going on.
She swore she didn't. She was just a lowly housewife. I know
her
nothing.
Her gowns on horses with the prisoners playing music.
Right. So her husband, Karl, was tried and found guilty to all charges, and he was sentenced to death.
Woohoo!
Sentenced to death because he disgraced himself and the SS.
Okay.
1 week before Buchenwald camp was liberated, Karl was executed by firing squad. Izza was found innocent of all charges.
What?
And
no way.
She knew what was happening at the camp.
She was out there making them run after each other for enjoyment.
Hold on. Izza was found innocent of all charges, and she was set free.
What?
She claimed she didn't know anything that was going on.
How did she not know? She rode her
horses. Oh, she knew, but she just claimed she didn't know. She didn't know anything about her husband's embezzlement. Just money seemed to appear out of nowhere.
She didn't know about her tanned human purse and gloves.
Oh, that wasn't even brought up yet. Nothing even came about that yet. But anyway, once she was set free, she took her kids and then she went to blend in with the rest of society in Germany.
Now, see, this would never work in today's world because she would be murdered.
The media would attack you.
Well, I know, but I mean, like, people would murder her.
Well, nobody knew about it. It was all, this is when
world,
still.
That's what I'm saying. In today's world, like, this could never
Well, happen. The camp, nobody claimed to even know that the camp was doing what it was doing. This was all enclosed.
So nobody in that town.
The camp didn't close down. The camp closed down like 3 years after Karl was indicted.
And so people in that town, did any of them know? I mean, people had to go to the parties and that couldn't have just been.
No, it was only
SS
for
people.
SS. It was all SS people. They kept to themselves. She left, took her kids, went and lived in town. So on April 11th, 1945, the prisoners of Buchenwald heard explosions, gunfire, and they got so excited because they knew whether it was the Americans or the Russians, it didn't matter, but they knew they were getting help.
Woohoo!
The guards probably knew too, but they weren't as happy as the prisoners were.
Yeah, gee, I wonder why.
I know. So the prisoners quickly realized that the guards could kill all of them just to destroy evidence and destroy the camp, set it on fire, because the Nazis didn't want anybody to know what was really going on in those camps.
I didn't even think about that.
Right. So the members of the camp's secret international committee handed out weapons that they had been hiding since 1942, and the Battle of Buchenwald started.
Ooh.
I don't know. The whole thing lasted a whole 20 minutes.
Not where I thought that was going.
The survivors were so proud that the camp was liberated by its underground organizations.
Was it like Hogan's Heroes?
It was a lot like Hogan's Heroes, and it's really funny that you say that, because one of the men that was a prisoner at the camp played LeBeau in Hogan's Heroes.
Aww.
Yeah. I think his name was like Robert Clary, something like that. Yeah.
Hmm.
So anyway, the survivors were very proud that they had liberated themselves, but they were really proud that it was all done humanely, and that the guards that were captured, they were treated very kindly, and no one was murdered or executed.
See, and they
were too nice.
Way better than
exactly
they treated those prisoners.
Exactly. So not long after that, the American infantrymen marched through the unguarded gates, and there it is said they found 2,700 unburied bodies and 3,000 living skeletons.
Wait, how many?
2,700 bodies.
The smell. How could people say they did not know what was going on? I don't believe that.
I don't know. So even General Patton visited this camp, and when he walked in, he became physically ill. He could not believe. He was shocked by the stacks of dead bodies.
How can you treat a person? How can you?
That's another thing. He was extremely angry that anybody could do this to another human being.
Anything. I can do it to an animal.
He was really angry at the townspeople below the hill that lived so close to the camp. And how could they not know?
The smell would be
for 8 years.
Horrendous.
Well, and you know what's? They profited from this, because before Camp Buchenwald had a crematorium, they would take the bodies down to the town and pay them.
To get rid of the bodies?
The crematorium. Yeah, they would pay the crematorium to burn the bodies. But it got, there were so many bodies that the crematorium in town couldn't handle it any longer. So they had to build their own. So they had to have known something.
They had to know.
They had to. General Patton insisted, actually, he ordered the mayor of the town that he wanted every person in the town to march up on the hill at what they called Blood Road. And he wanted to give them a tour. He told the mayor that the townspeople had to view the camp just as he saw it. So he didn't get rid of the bodies. He left everything as it was when he first entered. A lot of people vomited. They cried. Some fainted. Others were stone-faced and totally masked their emotions.
Probably in shock.
They were even shown a display. They made this table display that had the shrunken heads, the human organs, the tattoos, lampshade with the human skin, everything. Of course, they were shocked, but each and everyone said that they had no clue what was going on.
Come on.
Well,
no.
It's kind of that.
Don't look.
Yeah.
And it's not there.
Just kind of turn a blind eye.
The smell. Come on now.
It would have to be awesome.
But I guess if they went up there and said anything, they'd be end up right there, too.
Right.
Going against them.
Patton had written in his diary about this, and he wrote that prisoners were fed 800 calories a day and died on an average of 100 a night. And when he came into the camp, that all the prisoners looked like animated mummies, and they even appeared to have the same intelligent level. He walked in, they tried to cheer, but they just didn't have the strength.
That's so sad.
And he also called press, and he made them come, and he told them to write everything as much as they could.
Good.
So after all that happened, the American Army decided they were going to gather everyone in connection to the Buchenwald camp, and they were going to be tried, and if found guilty, they would be punished.
And I hope they were found guilty.
It also included Iza.
Good.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like her.
The U.S. Army tracked down Iza and placed her under arrest. And her kids were made ward of the state until her sister took them in. She was sent to the woman's prison and waited until her trial for 16 months. The whole time she kept on saying, I'm just an innocent mom. I'm just a housewife. I knew nothing that was going on. But she was charged by the American authorities for abusing prisoners at the camp. That's it. Well, what can you do?
She has a human skin glove in her set.
Yeah, well, the Americans didn't bring that into her trial. They talked about it, but they didn't have the evidence. The chief prosecutor had said that the most difficult part of the trial was to present a case that the court would believe, which you got to admit, I mean, this is totally outlandish.
Never
in a million years.
Nope.
You know? But Iza was found guilty and sentenced to life in prison.
Woohoo!
She later wrote a letter insisting of her innocence. due to an appeal and all this other kind of stuff that I didn't really want to get into, she was let go after 4 years.
Boo.
But that's okay. The Germans got their hand to try her.
Yay.
You know, it was all set. Everybody was waiting for her to come in. She walked in and she's pregnant.
Are you kidding me?
No, she'd been...
She was in prison,
she
right?
was in prison.
A woman's prison?
Yeah. Yeah. Don't know who the baby's daddy is, but she was pregnant.
Well, I'm going to take a stab in the dark here and say it wasn't a fellow prisoner.
No, it was probably somebody that worked at the kitchen or something like that. But it's believed that she intentionally got pregnant to avoid the death penalty.
Nice.
But, you know, once again, she denied everything. She had no knowledge of anything that was going on, nothing. But she was found guilty and sentenced to life in prison.
Good.
And there she gave birth to a boy named Uwe, a little boy.
Uwe.
So she was put into the prison and she lived in seclusion by her own will. She never wanted to talk to anybody. She never socialized. She just sat in her cell. And then she broke her isolation about 15 years later when she started to receive visits from a tall young man.
Mm, she's got herself a gentleman caller.
Well, yeah. Caller was gentleman. Yes.
Who was it?
On the morning of September 2nd, 1967, Izza was found with a noose made out of bed sheets around her neck, and she had hung herself from the door latch in the middle of the night. Waiting in line to see her was that tall young man, and that tall young man was Uwe. Nobody knows how he found out she was his mother. No one knows. He was given up for adoption. Prison officials called him aside and told him the news and then handed him a note that Izza had written him, and it said, "I cannot do otherwise. Death for me is liberation." She was then buried at the prison without any clergy. It's what they call a civil function. The only one that was really there was Uwe, and he's not been seen since.
So how old would he be today?
He was about today?
Yeah, today.
Well, he was 20 in 67, so he'd be
like 60,
a lot older.
70, somewhere in there, around 70.
Somewhere around there, yeah. Huh. Math is hard.
Math is hard. Yeah. Wow.
So that's the end.
I cannot believe people exist in this world like that. I really can't. And the fact that she normalized it, that they normalized it.
Well, I think everybody that was involved in that normalized it. If one person said it was okay to do it, it was fine. But, you know, everybody went on that, "I was ordered to do it. I was ordered to do it." Well, I couldn't do it if I was ordered. I couldn't.
I guess it's that cult mentality, though. Like, if everybody's doing it, then you want to do it. You want to be part of the club.
Or if everybody's doing it, it must be okay.
I
don't know. I mean, there had to have been some guards. I mean, some of the prisoners stated that there were guards that were nice, and to get more food, they would appease those guards, and those guards would try to help.
I don't know.
So not everybody was awful, but to be associated with it, I think they were awful.
I think they were awful. They were just a less awful than some of the other ones. But to be an SS guard at a concentration or death camp, you would have to be a pretty cruel person to get that spot.
Well, if you wouldn't be an SS guard, you would be in the prison. Most of those people in there were people that disagreed with the Nazis. Wow. They were political prisoners. There's even a story of a priest who was beaten badly, and he was tortured, held without food, and
because he was
hung.
Catholic, or because he went against the
because
Nazis?
He went against the Nazis. People were amazed on how he survived, for how long he survived. Mm-hmm. I mean, barely given any food, but still he trudged on. One day they made him walk to the infirmary, and they just killed him. He survived all that time. He probably would still be alive, but they killed him. They just didn't want to take him anymore.
All right, Jen, you want to you can catch us on Facebook, Twitter. Jen loves to talk on Twitter. That's it. So remember, lock your doors
and keep passing by those open windows.
Bye-bye.
Love ya.